build a high-performing culture? This is Culture Architects. Candid conversations with extraordinary leaders sharing their biggest successes, failures, and lessons learned on their culture journeys. Here's David J. Friedman.
Welcome back to my conversation with Meg Newhouse, the co-founder and CEO of Chicago-based firm Inspirant Group. In our last episode, Meg and I had a great conversation about the origins of what her firm calls unconsulting. We also talked about the importance of meeting people at their individual level. Today, we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to talk about selecting the best people for Inspirant and some of the mistakes that she's learned along the way. We're also going to examine what it means to be a people-first company. Can you think of people you've interviewed, maybe they were recommended to you, maybe they weren't, who after you interviewed them, you thought, you know, nice person, but I don't think they'd be a fit here?
Yes. Yes. And yes. And we've also hired folks that even, you know, after a couple of weeks, we're like, oh,
that wasn't the best choice.
Right. And what happens, as I know you know, is it becomes toxic. Even just one person, especially on a small team, but even in a larger organization, even just one person on a team very clearly can stick out, especially I think when you've defined such a strong culture, like when it's really understood how to behave and someone is not fitting into that. And it's not that you want everyone to be thinking the same or acting the same, but it's just that general understanding of behavior, I think. And so, we've had a couple times where, and you know, you've got people that are like, let's just give them another month, or let's just give them, we found over the 5 years, almost 6 years now, that really that first inkling, you're like, yeah, that's probably not going to work. So you give them feedback and you try to coach them up and you try to give people another opportunity. But there's something fundamental, I think, about having those values intrinsically in yourself that align with that of the organization that you're working with. And if they don't have that, I think it's hard to change that.
I often say that people come to the workplace already fully baked. You know, who they are is who they are. You're not likely to change much of that. Maybe a little, but not much of it. And so you kind of have to find the people who are going to be a fit from the beginning, because you're not likely to take the people who aren't a fit and somehow do some magical intervention to convert them into becoming a good fit. It doesn't work very often.
Yeah, there's a quote. I wish I could remember what it's by, but you know, it's basically that you can pretty much teach anybody skills that you need them to have, but you can't really teach them how to be a nice person, or, you know, you can't really change their personality, right? So
very rarely can you. And you know, the comment you made, Meg, about, you know, the clearer you are about your culture, the more obvious it becomes that they're either a fit or not fit. And I found that to be true as well, that what I've seen is that when a company is vague about their culture, they often have employees or team members who they have these constant conversations where, I don't know, Meg just doesn't seem to be a good fit around here, but I can't quite put my finger on it because I don't know what a good fit is because I've never defined it clearly enough. And as soon as you get much more clarity about, well, this is exactly what our culture is, whether it's those three values or a set of behaviors, as we call them, or whatever, however you want to define it. But once you have enough clarity about that, it becomes much more obvious. Oh, now I understand why we've been struggling with that person. And often they themselves start to recognize, you know what, I'm not really a good fit here.
Right.
Although I often tell people as well, when they drop off the back end like that, rarely do they say, this company is amazing. What an incredible place to work. I'm just not a good fit. Right. Doesn't usually sound like that. No. It usually sounds more like, oh, they don't get it around here. What are these people are stupid? And, you know, it's 'cause they have a personal interest and they have an investment in psychologically not feeling like they're the problem. But at the end of the day, you got to find the people that are going to be a good fit, because you're not going to build the company you want without it.
All I was going to say is that, you know, and letting someone go is so challenging. You know, nobody likes to have that conversation. But what, again, with one of our values being care about the greater good, and you think about that toxic person with your team, that's one person that you're like, gosh, it's going to be so hard to let this person go, and they don't have anything else lined up and blah, blah, blah. But then you think about, well, what about the other 12 people on that team that are noticing that person isn't pulling their weight, or that are on these calls where that person is saying this negative thing? And, you know, so it's that again, like I've had to coach some of my team coming back to that. And it's like, I know it's hard. It sucks, but let's care about the greater good and think about the rest of the organization and do our best to make it as easy as possible for offboarding the person we need to.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple things I think that are really important about what you're saying there, Meg. One is, you're right, we often, one of the unintended consequences in my experience of not dealing with that person is the impact it has on the rest of the team that you're describing. And sometimes you could make vulnerable some of your best people who might right. choose to leave, because if this is the kind of stuff that's okay here, right. do I want to stick around? So here you're protecting that person who's the problem.
Right.
Making at risk some of your very best people. So there is that. The other thing that I found interesting, and I'm sure you've seen this too, is that I think that often my experience is that when we're trying to decide how to deal with that problem person, and we realize, okay, that person shouldn't be in our company anymore, our struggle with how to do that gets in the way of making the decision. In other words, there's two different decisions here. One decision is, should this person be on our team? That decision is usually pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. The second decision is, how do I do it? And mm-hmm. because I don't know how to do it and it's awkward or it's uncomfortable, we don't make the decision. And mm-hmm. I often counsel, if we separate those two, we can make a clear decision that this person shouldn't be in our company, and we can do it in a way that's still honoring of our culture. So mm-hmm. we could give them outplacement services. We could give them severance pay, depending upon how yes. guilty we feel about it.
Right,
you know,
we right.
can do a variety of things to support them in how we let them go in a caring, concerned, you know, human kind of way. And they still don't get to be part of our company because they're not a
Absolutely.
Good fit.
Absolutely.
And separating those is a critical decision.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's the way to do it. You don't need to hold on to toxic people just because you're a people first company, right? Or you don't
right.
need to hold on to
yes.
people. And they're not necessarily toxic. They just aren't the right fit. That just aren't going
yes.
to help you achieve what you want to achieve in your organization because you're a people first company, you know? So
yes.
I think, yeah. Yeah.
And I'll bet, you know, it's an interesting point you're raising, because I'll bet you've been challenged from time to time by team members about their interpretation of what some of those words mean. So you're people first. And I'll mm-hmm. bet you've had times where people say, well, then how come I didn't get a raise, or how come you let go of this person, or how come I didn't get whatever I wanted to have, because aren't we supposed to be people first? So talk about times you've maybe been faced with that kind of a challenge where people had their own version of what that means. And how do you coach them about that?
I'm honestly, David, I'm thinking about it. And we ask our team for feedback all the time. Mm-hmm. I just got done with a round of calling everybody in our organization, having a half hour virtual mm-hmm. meeting with them just for them to tell me like what's going on. So we have anonymous survey feedback links where they can give feedback all the time. We kind of push mm-hmm. those every quarter. So even if people don't typically fill them out until we push it, so we'll push it every quarter, even though it's there all the time. And then twice a year, I will jump on a call with everybody, W-2, 1099, everybody, and just say, how's it going? What do I need to know? You know, how does the future look with Inspirin? Is there anything mm-hmm. we could be doing better? Is mm-hmm. there anything I could be doing better? And David, I have to tell you, I have not yet been challenged by the team. Like you say, you're people mm-hmm. first, but, and I think it's because we really do listen, and we really do everything we can to meet each individual person with what they need. And we're small mm-hmm. enough to do that. Now, I don't know how scalable this is. We've mm-hmm. managed to grow to where we are now, and we're in a growth period for the organization. So we're coming up on 6 years in January, and we see the next 3 to 5 years being a time of high growth, but again, intentional, there's that word again, very yeah. intentional. Like, we're not looking to blitz scale. We still are completely 100% bootstrapped. We haven't taken in any outside funding yet. And we're happy, you know, we're profitable. We've got a good team. Everyone's enjoying the work that they're doing. So right now I feel like we have a pretty open and transparent and communicative culture, and we really haven't had that. And I would tell you, I promise, I'm not just trying to paint a rosy
picture. I don't doubt you.
But, you know, I haven't had anyone challenge me like, well, you say you're people first, but then why are you doing this? Because I really do think we take the time to mm-hmm. meet everybody with what they need. And, you know, we've got people who have, we have people who need to take kids to doctor's appointment regularly. We have somebody who's a scuba diver that got like a last minute 3 week trip to Egypt that we made work. You know, we have, you know, people that do outside sports, that, you know, have to sign off early and all this stuff, that, okay, like, get your work done. That's why we hired you. We trust you. You're a grown up. You're capable. You're talented. We know you're not going to let things fall, that, you know, we trust you. You get your work done. So yeah, go for it.
You know, it's funny. When I was running my first company, in very similar to your description of having these virtual meetings, we were a brick and mortar company back then. And I used to do these regular lunches with a variety of employees just to pick their brains, see how they're doing, what's happening, what can I learn? And I would often ask them about what makes any place, not just our company, but any place, a really good place to be. And I always found it kind of sad in a way and striking that what I heard most frequently, if I were to distill what I heard most frequently, it would be that they appreciated being treated like adults. And I say that's sad because it suggests that in other places they're not. And it was exactly what you're describing. It's just the ability to say, hey, I trust you. You're an adult. You know, you're a good person. I know you want to do good work. If you need time off, take time off. I'm not worried about that. And that was what they called being treated as an adult. And again, it's such a simple thing and sad in a way that that should stand out, that that would be different from other experiences they had. But it's not that complicated.
I don't think so either. Like, I'm like, I am not a genius. This is not rocket science. This is just treating people the right way. David, there's this, I saw this new technology come out that like jiggles your mouse for you, essentially, so that it shows that you're active whatever your chat thing. Okay, now you're.
What level of non-trust does that reflect?
That's what I'm saying. Like, so, I mean, unfortunate for the people that have to download this, but then like they're doing that because the company clearly, or their manager, whomever, has created this feeling where they can't step away from their computer for any set amount of time. Anyway, I mean, that is sad to me that at this point in the 21st century, you know, people aren't embracing trusting their team. And if you can't trust the people on your team, why did you hire them? Or why are they still there? Right?
Yeah. One of the behaviors, so as you may have seen on our website, we define culture in terms of behaviors and we call them fundamentals. And one of the fundamentals in our own company and many of our clients is we call it assume positive intent.
I saw that.
And it's exactly that. It's just, you know, most people are good people. You can trust them. They want to do good things. And to your point, if you can't trust them, why'd you hire them? They shouldn't be here then. And just starting from that assumption. And what's so interesting about that particular fundamental is if you treat people in that way as if they are trustworthy, they show up to be more trustworthy. And if you treat them as if they can't be trusted, they act in ways that are less trustworthy. And so there's a self-fulfilling prophecy to that.
There is.
And it's just, to your point, it seems so darn obvious. This is not rocket science. So shifting gears a little bit, you mentioned that your company has been remote from the beginning, as has my current company, CultureWise, has been remote from the very beginning too. And so the pandemic clearly wasn't a shift for you from being in person to being remote. And yet there, regardless of whether it was the pandemic or just your design from the very beginning, there are clearly challenges to managing a remote workforce and building culture in a remote workforce that are different than when you are physically together. So it requires a higher level of, we'll go back to that word, intentionality, because you don't just see each other at the water cooler and talk about last night's football game when we bumped into each other in physical space. So you've got to be a lot more intentional. So talk to me a little bit about what have you learned about managing a remote workforce and specifically managing culture in a remote workforce? And, you know, what are the lessons that you would pass to others about that?
Absolutely. And we do talk about this a lot because we still have clients. One of the largest things they'll ask us for on our L&D side is, well, we need to talk about managing remote teams. Like, we've been doing this almost 3 years, guys. What? You're still struggling? Okay. So I talked about those culture pieces that we have, right? We have those Thursday meetings that we have the all hands meetings. We did at the very beginning of COVID, we started working in more virtual happy hours because prior to COVID, we would have in-person happy hours in the Chicago area. Our team has also become more dispersed. So about half of our team is Chicago or Chicago area based, but the other half is all over the country. So then we've had
and
to
I know,
start
by
to
the
think
way
about,
that you guys always call that Chicago land. That's just such an interesting word. Like, we don't talk about Philadelphia land, but it's the only place I know where they talk Chicago land.
I love it. I've never thought about it, but it does. It kind of sounds like an amusement park, doesn't it?
Yes.
We have about half of our team is in the Chicagoland area. So we've had to be more intentional about, you know, having, if we have in-person happy hours just for the Chicago folks, that's leaving out about half of the team now. So what does that look like? Being mindful of Zoom fatigue, you know, thinking about, gosh, this has been really hot, at least on LinkedIn lately, is our happy hours actually not very inclusive when you think about working parents or you think about, you know, people having to care for others. At the end of the day, probably the last thing they want to do is stick around for another 2 hours to drink with people, right? Or whatever. Like, so we just have to get creative and thoughtful and clever. And the best way to do that is ask your team what they want and need, and then be ready to act on it. So ask them regularly what they want and need, and then be prepared to meet those needs once you ask them about it. So in addition to having all of these kind of remote culture building things, you know, teams, like individual project teams, have started to really embrace, you know, how can we create kind of a bonding? So we have one team that changes their background, and we use Teams as our internal, you know, video chat. And so they'll do different Disney movies, you know, based on whatever. And everyone is a different character. And then they also, you know, we do a lot of kind of icebreaker, but not too cheesy, with our internal team meetings. So like every week I mentioned, we have our internal full-time team meeting where we talk about our pillar updates. We start that meeting with an icebreaker and someone different leads the icebreaker. And it's actually the last probably 2 months, it's turned into crowdsourcing. So someone will be like, tell me your favorite Chicago restaurant, you know, and people will kind of go there because they wanted to try new restaurants. Or someone was asking, we have an offsite retreat coming up next month, and or actually now this month in October, you know, asking some questions about that. So that's a lot of fun. So creating opportunities for people, you don't just jump in and start talking about the business, you know, build in a little buffer to get to know each other a little bit, ask some questions. You know, we did a scavenger hunt before. I mean, we've done, I give you a whole list of things that we've done that aren't too cheesy. People have a laugh. Yeah. People have some fun doing that. So that's a great way to build culture remotely. As I mentioned before, I firmly believe in getting together in real life as well. I think that that's important. I especially think like sharing a meal or, you know, sitting down, like that's a good way to get to know people on a more personal level. So we do try to incorporate that as best we can. But when we do that, it has to be very intentional. If people are going to travel and take time away from their home, from their families, even if it's just for a night, that has to be like the best use of their time. We really have to just like make sure. So we are having Inspirant's very first offsite retreat. We're going to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin for 3 days. The week of October 17th. And it's our full timers and our 1099s. Everyone's invited to be a part of this. And the programming, I am so excited. It's just going to be such a great use of time. But also, there's so many benefits that come out of this, right? We have in-person time. Some people have never met in real life before. We get to share some meals. We get to do some, we're doing like a ropes course, and we're, you know, having pictures taken together. And like, that's really great. So those touch points, I think, can really, then when we all go back to our desks and we're meeting this way again, we have that shared experience that we can leverage. So you can do that virtually, you can do that in person, but I think that whatever you do, you just have to be very intentional. The last thing I'm gonna say on this is understanding how each person on your team wishes to communicate. So one of the first things I'll say to a new team member is, if you wanna get my attention, you should text me. If you email me, I'm probably not gonna see it for a couple of days, just so you know, because I get hundreds of and hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. So if you need my attention, text me. Next best is to, you know, ping me on our chat. If it isn't urgent, you can send me an email. I will get to it, but it's going to take a couple of days. So understanding that, like my partner Amir, he just likes a phone call. So we'll just call each other, you know, when we're driving somewhere just to check in and say hi. So just understanding each person on your team, the best way to communicate with them. I think that there is no one size fits all solution. So to build these remote relationships and to really show that you're invested in the team, understand what each person on your team needs. And that takes time and that takes intention. But if you're going to be a good leader, that's, I think that's your job.
Yeah, it is. I often say that the CEO is the chief cultural officer.
I feel that way. I really do.
Yeah. 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 That is your job. And it's not an HR function. It's a strategic function.
I agree.
So let me switch gears just a little bit as we get close to wrapping up our time together. somewhere along the line, as intentional as you've been, as smart as you've been about all of this, you've made mistakes. Mm. Things that you look back and say, God, that was dumb. Learned my lesson there. I won't do that one again. What's the biggest mistake you've made in culture building? Or what do you know now that you didn't know then?
I'm going to echo something we were talking about before, but I think it's just holding on to people too long that, you know, aren't a good fit for some reason or another. We haven't really had any very like toxic people that we've brought on. Right. But, you know, you bring them on and you're just like, oh, you know, the first little chip in the veneer, you're like, I didn't see that, but let's just give them another shot. And then, you know, I mean, there's been a few people I can think of that was just like, I just knew, but it's just, you know, my heart was just too, I just cared too much about that individual person and didn't want to have the difficult conversations. Cause I don't mind giving feedback because we talk about in our culture that it's a gift. And, you know, you could say like, I owe you this feedback because I care about you. You might not know this about yourself, but I want to give you this feedback. So I'm okay with that. I think I just was like, we can turn it around.
Maybe.
So I, you know, that's been a big lesson learned. And now, you know, coming up on 6 years, as soon as I see it or someone on my team comes to me and they're like, well, so-and-so, I'm just like, look, guys, this is going to be hard, but I think we really need to think about if this person's the right fit for the team and for the company. Yeah. And so that's been a really good lesson learned, a hard one, but a good one.
It's interesting how often people face that and how frequently they keep making the same mistake over and over. And each time saying, God, I should have done that a long time ago. Why did I wait so long? And the next time they keep doing it.
Right. It has taken a couple stumbles to be like, to finally be like, okay.
Yeah.
I think this is what needs to happen.
Well, this is great. So, you know, what I hear most as I think about our conversation here today, Meg, you know, the word that you referred to earlier, and I use that word all the time, is intentionality. That when I look at what separates pretty decent people from amazing people and pretty good companies from amazing companies, it's all about being intentional. It's that, you know, my experience is that the good leaders and the good companies naturally do a lot of right things. As we said, this isn't rocket science. You intuitively, as a people person, as a leader who gets it, you would naturally, I'm sure, you as an individual leader and so many others like you, would naturally do many of the right things. But it's a whole different level to just to not rely on what one would naturally do, but to be way more intentional, way more thoughtful, way more purposeful about every aspect of what you're doing. And what I hear in our conversation today is there's a level of intentionality about everything you're doing, from how you've defined your culture, how you're picking the people, the, as I call them, rituals that you practice around it, how long they get to stay there, every aspect of what you're doing is being thought out. And that's why we call this podcast The Culture Architects.
I love that.
Because you've been a true architect of your culture. And so I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us today. I know our listeners will get a lot of benefit from that. And thank you so much for being part of it.
David, thank you for all you do. I mean, this is such an important topic and you've been a leader in it for so many years now. So I appreciate you using this format to share and for having me on. I'm quite honored.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. And that's it for this episode of Culture Architects with my fellow culture architect, Meg Newhouse, the co-founder and CEO of Inspirant Group. If you've been enjoying the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe. That way you'll automatically get my new episodes whenever they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love it if you left us a review, and that way more folks like you can discover the show. I'll see you next time.
This has been Culture Architects with David J. Friedman. Join us next time for more insights and wisdom from great leaders in all walks of life. To book David for your next event or to learn more about his writing, speaking, or consulting, go to davidjfriedman.com. Culture Architects with David J. Friedman is a production of CultureWise.